Yeah. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Green Divas Radio Show. Hey, Green Diva Lynn.
Hey, Green Diva Meg. How are you?
I'm good. I survived Kleinfeld's big annual sale today.
Ooh.
And for anybody who doesn't know what that is, Kleinfeld's is like if you ever watched any of these wedding shows, like Say Yes to the Dress, which I don't, but my daughter does. Anyway, she got my middle daughter got a special like appointment before the big sale. And if you've ever seen like film of the big sale every year, women like beat each other. Blood, you know, it's like there will be blood, you know.
Sounds like a great time.
It's a nightmare. But anyway, so she had a special appointment before the sale.
Lucky her.
And we had an appointment with one of the lovely women who was on the show, Say Yes to the Dress, that my younger daughter recognized right away. She was starstruck. She was like fangirling, you know. It was fun. It was really, really fun. And, you know, it was a special time. But, oh, my God, you know, it's like a
She bought the dress.
She said yes to the dress.
Oh, we should have put her in touch with Lindy Daniel.
Oh, yeah?
She does beautiful work on eco wedding dresses, man.
Well, you know that she sprung this on me. Like, Mommy, I have this appointment. And I'm like, what, what? And as you know, we had to rearrange our schedule. Thank you. And thank you to all those lovely people who I had to cancel on today in the studio for being patient, because I'm a mom.
I think I gave them another excuse, like,
yeah, no.
Oh, well.
I know.
No, I'm just kidding.
Well, you know what? I'm a mom and family first.
Hey, you got to do your mom thing.
Yeah, yeah. So, anyway, I digress. I'll tell you, it's no fun, though. It was very bitter, bitter cold to get up early and, you know, do all that stuff, but it was a party. It was a party.
Fun time.
So we have a big show today.
It's a big show.
We've always got a big show. Our feature is Sabrina Schenkman.
Yeah.
And she is a journalist with, what's the name of the climate, Inside Climate News?
Inside Climate News.
Thank you. But she worked on a film, like an amazing film.
I need to watch that.
Yeah, yeah, and it's called Terror at the Top of the World, and it's really about a man, I think he was up there studying climate change, I'm not even sure where, somewhere in the Arctic where there are polar bears, and he got attacked by a polar bear, like bad, but thankfully he survived, and this is sort of about his story, but the backdrop of the story is about there is an increase in polar bear activity, which may be attributed to climate change. So, you know, we'll hear what she has to say about that.
I can't wait.
Well, yeah, it is interesting. So what else?
Yeah, I guess back in right now they're saying, or she had said in her interview on Democracy Now, that we're on course for about 35 attacks this decade, but back in the 60s and 70s, there were maybe 10 per decade.
Wow.
I don't think it means that we have more polar bears because it seems like their numbers have gone down.
Yeah, yeah. I think that their territory is reducing and perhaps their food supply.
Yes. So they have to eat something.
Yeah.
We just really don't want it to be humans.
Yeah. And, you know, when you think of, like, the Coca-Cola commercial with the happy, sweet polar bear, you know, like, that could eat you, you know. That probably...
Not to laugh about it.
I know, really. I know, we are so sick.
That's so sick.
Oh, my God. So what else do we have? We have...
Yeah, he did survive. This guy did survive.
Yeah, he did. And apparently he's amazing. So
Well, I don't want to give it all away, but I think the film will be worth watching.
Oh, yeah. I think so, too. So then we had a special. You gave up your My Earth 360 for the third week in a row.
Mm-hmm.
To Catherine.
Hey, anything for Catherine Hayhoe.
She is so much fun. I mean, I know she's a serious woman, serious scientist, but she's very energetic and fun to talk to.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously she's got a very optimistic view of things.
She's a climate scientist.
She's a climate scientist.
She's done years of living dangerously. That's how we found out about her.
That's how we learned about her, and we talked to her. This is the second time we've spoken to her. So we talked a bit about the latest news, about the hottest year and all that fun stuff.
I think that should be a song.
the hottest year and that fun stuff?
Right. Let's call Andy Revkin. He can put that together.
There you go. All right. I'm on.
I'm going to email him.
But she had some other things that she talked about, and so it's a great My Earth 360. Please listen to that. And, of course, now, we haven't talked to John Volker in a while, and I feel bad.
I would have to say I've never spoken to him.
You've never spoken to him. But after, you know, he gives us a wrap-up of the North American International Auto Show from last mm-hmm. month, where we all were. And but he's got, you know, such a better, you know, more educated view of things than we do.
Yeah, we were just having fun doing our little videos.
We really were having fun. And so he has some interesting things to talk about. Always interesting. He's so informative and articulate and fun. We love our green dude, John. Green car dude, John, we call him.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we have an Earth Matters this week. And I think this one.
Oh, I hear a dog barking.
Oh, hello, Gracie. Come here, girl. So, you know, meanwhile, buygreen.com, you got to go to your trusted source for all things green, whether it's home, office, garden, and
personal care products,
all the cool stuff. And they've got a rating system. So you can go to our site, thegreendivas.com.
/marketplace.
So we have some interesting stories coming up, right, on the blog this week, Lynn?
Yes, we do. I guess I can disclose it today.
You might as well.
Be on the lookout for green sex toys.
An article about them, a post about them, not necessarily actual.
They're not going to come chasing after you like a polar bear.
It's like a nightmare, right? That sounds like a nightmare. There are green sex toys chasing me down.
We always start laughing when we get onto the eco-sexy subjects.
Right? I know. We're so juvenile, right?
Right. So that's from Stephanie Weiss, who did a segment with us a while back about it, but we are, because Valentine's Day is coming up, what better time to...
Yeah, so check.
Put it out there.
You got to go to thegreendivas.com. We have apps, man, for our new GDGD radio.
Oh, you're changing the subject.
Well, yeah, you know what? Because we have to wrap it up.
Of course.
We have to wrap it up, man.
Oh, sorry.
So, check out GDGDradio.com. And please go to fundGDGDradio.com.
Yes,
no, fund,
please do.
It's fundGDGD.com. Because, you know... We Green Divas need you, man.
And when you donate, because I know you will, there's going to be something that pops up that says if you share this and two of your friends or whatever end up donating to our campaign, then you will get a Green Divas tote.
And it's so cool,
it's a
our
bonus
tote.
Reward.
So stay tuned. Lots more coming.
For millions of people, the morning cup of coffee is the best way to kickstart the day. But did you know that the filter might be adding toxins instead of keeping them out? More after this.
Everyone wants to be a part of the green movement, and that's a great thing. Going green takes on a whole new meaning when you add tall grass beef to your family's dinner table. It's tender and juicy, and since the cattle graze on the natural grasslands of Kansas, it's also loaded with essential fatty acids and omega-3s that regular grain-fed beef lacks. It's good for you and your family, and good for the earth. For more information and to order tall grass beef online, go to www.tallgrassbeef.com.
If part of your wake-up routine is a couple cups of coffee, you might want to consider not just the brand of coffee you drink, but the kind of filter you're using to keep out impurities. Those bright white filters contain dioxins that add up in our bodies and stay in the environment. Dioxins are persistent organic pollutants, meaning that they can move within the ecosystem, as well as from coffee filters to the coffee. The safe solution is simple. Use the natural unbleached paper filters that keep out what you don't want, including chemicals. So the next time you're ready to put a pot of coffee on, think green by going brown. I'm Bill Curtis with Earth Matters.
Overwhelmed by environmental news? Listen to the Green Divas My Earth 360 Report for the latest eco news bits from around the globe. carefully curated and born by our need to say WTF. But we also love to share encouraging stories and, of course, ways that you can make your voice count for the Earth. It's not just my Earth, it's our Earth. And together, we can make a difference. Well, I feel like a lucky green diva because I get to talk to one of our favorite climate scientists, Catherine Hayhoe, who's been on the show before, but honestly, I could talk to her like every day and not get enough information. Hi, Catherine.
Hi. Why don't we do that?
I know, right? You should have a show. You really should just have a show because I love how you communicate. Obviously, that's part of your thing, but you know, you're so busy and on the front lines of everything that's happening. And I believe you're really out there with your business, you know, and we talked about it before we got on the air, how many new communities and government organizations that are asking you to come in and help them look into the future and understand how we can adapt. I think that's brilliant.
I love doing this work because it really shatters the myth that climate change is an issue that doesn't matter to us right here, right now. There's this idea that it's all about future generations or it's all about the polar bears in the Arctic. The reality is that we are experiencing the impacts of climate change right here today in the places where we live.
Right.
And I love the fact that so many of our cities,
yep,
not just the cities you'd expect,
right,
like Portland or Seattle, but other cities like San Antonio or Washington, D.C., in order to plan for a sustainable future, we have to plan for a changing climate.
Yes. And that really, that acknowledgement is really solidifying that, okay, there's just no more debating what's real and what isn't. It's happening. Let's move on. And how do we fix it? And that's where you come in. So before we get into too much, I know that there was big news in climate with this hottest year ever thing for 2014 with NOAA and NASA. Can you talk about that a minute?
That's right. This year broke the record again. We've broken the record numerous times over the past decade. Broke the record again for the warmest year on record. Why this year was so remarkable, though, is because this time it didn't get any help from El Nino.
Right.
Usually our record warm years are also El Nino years, which means they're typically warmer than average naturally.
Right.
And then we have the human climate change on top. But this year without El Nino. So although for us climate scientists, to be honest, it's one more data point, because when we look at climate, we have to look at averages over 20, 30, 50 years.
Right.
To us as individuals, it is a very stark reminder we're going to continue to see these types of records broken again and again, year after year, until we figure out how to fix this problem.
Well, that means some of the problems that we're experiencing due to climate change are not going to get any better. Necessarily.
It's true, but it's not going to get worse as fast if we can reduce our emissions. We know that climate is changing. We know why it's changing, because of all this carbon we're putting. And we also know that unless we act quickly to figure out different ways to get our energy to produce carbon, that our impacts are rapidly transitioning from noticeable to serious to even potentially dangerous.
Yeah. Right. Critical. You know, so there's a lot in, even though it's a tiny degree hotter or whatever, I like how you've explained why El Nino isn't assisting this in a natural way. This is just us making things hotter.
It is. And we also have to remember that on human timescales, the temperature of the Earth is as stable as the temperature of our human bodies. So our temperature goes up and down by maybe a degree over the course of a day, but no more. And if it goes up by more than 1 or 2 degrees, we get worried.
Right.
Well, our Earth temperature has already gone up about a degree and a half, and we are starting to get worried.
Okay, so the Earth has a fever, and we have to pay attention.
That's exactly it. And anybody who's a parent, who has a kid, who's done that late night run to the emergency room, we know that fevers are serious and we need to take them seriously.
Okay, good. That's a good way to look at it. I appreciate that. Now, you know, in other news, the Pope is not only is he really an advocate for environmental health and finding ways to help mitigate climate change, but I think he's coming to the U.S. soon?
Yes. This Pope has made a number of very strong statements on the topic of climate change. Not just that it's real, but that we as Christians have a responsibility to God and to our fellow humans to address this issue instead of just burying our heads in the sand or sticking our fingers in our ears and pretending that it doesn't exist.
Well, that's good because, you know, there's an awful lot of Christians that listen to the Pope.
I know. It's really amazing to see a world leader like this stepping up.
Yeah.
However, here in the States, though, although we have lots of Catholics, we also have many other Christians, Protestants, evangelical denominations. And to many people, the Pope is not necessarily that respected spiritual leader. So while it's fantastic to see the Pope speaking out, we also have to remember that the National Association of Evangelicals has a wonderful report out about how caring for climate change is caring for the poor. The Southern Baptist Association has made statements. I and 199 other evangelical climate scientists have written a letter talking about how we need to address climate change. So we see faith leaders from all walks of life and from all parts of the spectrum speaking out on this very important issue.
Except for the guy whose name I can't remember from the episode you did of Years of Living Dangerously. Please tell me he's come around.
I'm not sure which guy you're referring to.
The evangelical minister. Or was he evangelical? I don't remember. He was a Baptist. I honestly can't remember what denomination.
Oh, yes, yes. Well, what often happens is, unless we can connect this issue to people's values,
yeah,
people will continue to reject it.
Yeah.
And so in the case of, you know, a church minister in rural Texas, he's been told that climate change is a liberal issue. Climate change is even an anti-Christian issue, challenging the idea that God is in control. He's told that you can't think it's real if you are this type of person, conservative, Republican, Christian.
Mm.
So the most important thing I think we can do is to connect the issue of climate change with the values that people already have,
yeah,
rather than trying to create new green values in people who, let's be real, are never going to have them.
I had the most fascinating conversation. I'm sure you know Paul Douglas.
Yeah.
And we just talked, actually, I interviewed him earlier today for another show. And, you know, we talked about the common values that, like, it really doesn't matter what religion or what you believe in, the common values of, you know, there's just certain things that we can all agree on, that we shouldn't be greedy, we shouldn't harm others. I mean, these are really basic things, you know, love thy neighbor, something like that.
I agree. And that's why I think it's so important to connect exactly these issues with climate change, because people don't think of climate change as loving your neighbor. People think of it as potentially loving the polar bear more than you love your neighbor.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. All right. So, that'll be interesting to see. Now, see, I'm not religious necessarily. I'm definitely not Catholic, but I like this Pope.
I think we all like people who seem to be sensible and who aren't, you know, ideologues always pushing a certain perspective that's kind of out on the fringe. I think I would agree with Paul Douglas that as humans, we all have some central core values that we can agree on. And the essential values of looking out for others, of being conservative, of not being greedy, these,
yeah,
all relate directly to the issue of climate change.
Yeah, exactly. Now, let's see, what else? There's a couple of other interesting things we were going to talk about. And one is, there's a new movie coming out by the folks that did Food, Inc., which I thought was a fabulous, very impactful documentary. What is it called? Merchants of Doubt?
That's right. There's this book that was written several years ago now by Naomi Oreskes called Merchants of Doubt. And in that, she set out to trace the links between people, merchants,
yeah,
who used to work for the tobacco industry, sowing,
oh,
doubt,
oh,
between the link, or doubt regarding the link between smoking and lung cancer.
Right.
But when that was pretty decisively finished, And, you know, now when we buy cigarettes, they'll have those warning lines on the packages if we buy them, which I don't, just to be clear. So those, many of those same people migrated over to the climate change area and have had long careers professionally sowing doubt that this is a real issue.
It's so sort of like they're litigators. They're like defense litigators that, you know, have to make a jury just have enough doubt not to do anything,
That's
not to convict.
Exactly it.
Yeah.
If you sow doubt, then you halt all forward action. So they don't have to convince people that it isn't true. They just have to convince people that it might not be true and we don't know.
Right. Ugh. That is kind of a depressing thought, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because for those of us that are working hard to help get everybody rallied and moving in a certain direction that, you know, we believe is helpful.
Exactly. Well, so this movie is going to be so cool because this movie actually goes and interviews these people. So if you want to know more about this, or if you have any friends or family members who are kind of a little skeptical as to whether there really are people out there doing this, take them to this movie and they will meet these people face to face.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's a good one. Ooh, I'm looking forward to this. And in the meantime, people can get the book and learn about it, right?
That's exactly right. It's available on Amazon.
All right. Very, very cool. And speaking of books, I know your book, which is really, I honestly don't have a copy of it, but I've seen bits of it, A Climate for Change.
That's right. Global Warming Facts for Faith-Based Decisions. I wrote it with my husband, who is a pastor, and originally he didn't think climate change was real either. So the book is really kind of the product of the discussions that we had for almost 2 years after we got married.
Wow. So so the book kind of follows a transformation or an evolution of his thoughts about climate change?
The book was outlined by him. So I did a lot of the science writing, but he was the one who said, okay, here's what we have to say. Here are the arguments that made sense to me.
Right.
We have to address them.
Interesting. Wow. I have to read this book. And
I'm
remiss that I haven't yet, and I apologize.
Don't do it yet, because right now the first edition is out of print, and it's going for iniquitous amounts of money on Amazon.
No. Well, that's good for you.
But we are, no, the money doesn't go to us.
Oh.
It goes to whoever the booksellers are who are selling it. But we are putting out a second edition, and by the end of the month, of February, we should have that second edition out in ebook format, so on Kindle or Nook. And for a limited time, when the book first comes out, we're going to have 99-cent downloads for all the people who've been waiting for that book to come out for the last few months.
Oh, you bet! I'm online with my Kindle right now. Like, that's it.
Awesome.
Well, I just love it, and I love your enthusiasm and the approach that you take to help us understand more of what's going on and how we can all not only understand it, but take action, you know, wake up and take action.
Exactly. There's so much that we ourselves can do personally, as well as participating with organizations like Citizens Climate Lobby that help us as individuals make our voices heard, because we need decisions at the state level and at the national level to support the decisions that we're making in our own lives every day.
Oh, well, you know, I've never heard of Citizens Climate Lobby.
Yes,
I guess
a great organization.
Under a rock, I'm sorry.
Not at all. What I love about them is they're not a bunch of climate scientists. They're not some kind of green group. They're just people
yep.
with regular jobs and regular careers who are worried about climate and they worry about it. And so Citizens Climate Lobby has chapters in every state around the country and around the world now. They're growing like crazy. And people just get together and learn, how do I write an op-ed? I've never done it before. How do I do it? How do I go in and meet with my congressman? I don't even know where they are. You know, I'll join your group, but I don't want to say anything. I'll just come along for moral support.
Right.
It gives us all an opportunity to get engaged.
I love it. What a great idea. Because, you know, we do. I mean, there are giant lobbies that we're up against for some of these types of issues, whether it's Monsanto or whatever. So I like this idea. Thank you for dropping that in there, because we're going to definitely highlight that and make sure folks find there. It's like the old PERGs, right? You know, the New Jersey PERG or whatever state you're in, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's a way for us to connect. with our states and, again, at the national level. It's fantastic.
Well, you're always full of great information, Catherine, and what a great cheerful attitude you have. So I'm looking forward to talking to you again, hopefully sooner than later, because there's always stuff to talk about.
I know, there definitely is. Well, it was great chatting with you today.
Thanks, Catherine.
Thank you.
Get all the details from this Green Diva's My Earth 360 report and lots more on thegreendivas.com. That's T-H-E, greendivas.com. And myearth360.com.
Every Green Diva needs a sidekick. At the Green Divas radio show, they're called Green Dudes. Time now for a deeper shade of green from a guy's perspective.
Wow, I just want to have like a little party, a moment here to celebrate that we're back on with one of my favorite green card dudes, John Volker. Yay! And the crowd cheered.
And Thanks very much. It's great to be here. I'm sending you a big blush.
Aw. Well, John is one of my favorite people in general, but I got to know him through, you know, having him on the show frequently. And, of course, we've been really bad hosts this year and haven't had him on in 2014 as much. But 2015 will be different because there's so much going on and we want to keep up. So, hey, you know, and I think we were ships passing in the night this year at the North American International Auto Show. Last year, we ended up running into each other at Tesla, which was rather fun and amusing.
That's great.
Wasn't that fun?
Yeah.
So tell me, give me the highlights of your show this year.
Sure. Well, from the perspective of Green Car Reports, this was a show that had a small handful of green cars, but it was an odd show this year because Detroit is it's the most prestigious, it's the most important auto show in the country. Then there are some B-list shows like New York and L.A. and Chicago.
Right.
But this year at Detroit, there weren't really any volume cars being introduced. And that's really just the cadence in automakers.
Okay.
You had a couple of trucks. You had the Toyota Tacoma, and you had the Nissan Titan, which really is as big as it sounds. And you had a couple of very fancy, very sexy sports cars, the Ford GT and the Acura NSX. You just didn't have any of the meat and potatoes cars.
Yeah.
But GM kicked off the press events Monday morning after the North American Car and Truck of the Year with the introduction of the 2016 Chevy Volt. This is the second generation of their plug-in hybrid. It's been designed to be smoother, quieter, more powerful, and they say it will provide 50 miles of all-electric range.
Yeah, they've extended the range in theory,
yep.
Right?
That's up from a rating of 38
right.
On the previous generation.
All right.
So that was really sort of the big news. It was the first news of the day. And it also has, I'm not going to call it a fifth seat. GM calls it an occasional fifth seating position, which means it's basically a padded shelf
right.
in the middle of the rear seat where someone can perch. There's a seatbelt there with their legs sort of straddling the battery pack in the tunnel. It's best if your fifth rider is short, slim, flexible, and very tolerant, but it is possible to put a fifth person back there. We tried it. We got our best approximation of your teenage kid's soccer player friend
right.
to sit in the middle. We found the smallest, slimmest auto rider we could.
There you go.
Anyway, so that was the Volt. It goes on sale in the second half of this year. They haven't announced pricing yet or trim levels. I think everyone is kind of hoping that they can get the price down so there's a base model at $29,995.
Right.
But we'll see. You know, not clear if that's going to happen. And then the other worries beyond pricing, really, are will GM do any kind of catchy, clever, and consistent marketing for the car? Because
right.
the marketing for the prior generation was all over the board,
yep.
and it would vanish for months or years at a time, and
yep.
they just didn't do a good job. So that was the Volt, and it had been teased for a while. I feel kind of bad for GM CEO Mary Barra because she was intending to have a Steve Jobs moment.
Yeah.
And she was going to introduce the Volt, start to walk off stage, then turn around and say, oh, and one more thing, and spring a completely unexpected concept car on the crowd,
yeah.
One that hadn't been rumored, one that hadn't been previewed or sent out an embargo. Regrettably, a very high-up GM executive, someone so high up that they can't fire that person, leaked it to the Wall Street Journal,
which
published its story at 10 o'clock the Friday night before the reveal. And it kind of turned my weekend upside down. I spent large portions of that weekend on the phone with people I know in Detroit and elsewhere in the industry.
Yeah.
But here's what we know. She did, in fact, introduce the Chevy Bolt, that's Bolt with a B, not Volt with a V, concept car. It's a subcompact five-door hatchback about the size of a Chevy Sonic or a Toyota Prius C.
Okay.
But it's fully electric, and she says it will have a 200-mile range, unlike the 80-mile range that today's electric cars have, and it will retail for $37,500, which means after the $7,500 federal tax credit, you're at $30,000.
Wow.
So this will be competition for the Nissan Leaf, for the BMW i3, arguably, although I'm not entirely convinced it competes as much as other reporters are saying with the supposed Tesla Model 3, which probably won't be out until sometime after the Bolt arrives.
Exactly. Now, wait, we got to back up because the i3, last year, I think you talked about the i3. Was it 2 years ago? Oh, my gosh. I don't know. But you were really impressed because it was really different technology. Do you still love the i3?
I do. It's the most efficient car sold in the U.S. It's rated at 124 miles per gallon equivalent in its battery version. And it's really the most advanced technology car you can buy below, you know, six figures.
Yeah, below the Tesla. Yeah.
Reinforced plastic body, the lightweight drivetrain, all of it. And I will admit, I'm kind of surprised how well the i3 has sold. It's been on sale for 8 months. There were, I think, 4 months in which GM sold more than 1,000 i3s a month.
Wow,
that's a lot right out of the bag. And
well, I'm just going on record that I'm finally getting one to play with for a week in a couple of weeks. So I will let everybody know, and you and I'll have to confer on that one at some point.
Excellent. I'm curious to know: are you getting the battery electric version, or the what's called the i3 Rex with the optional range-extending two-cylinder engine in the back? Do you know?
I have no idea, but I'm sure Pierre, my friendly logistics guy working with this, with BMW here, I'm sure he'll be able to tell me that. I'm going to have to ask now.
Yep. Yeah, it's for longer distances, the range-extended version really does work because you get about 70 miles on the battery, or maybe 50 if it's weather like this.
Right.
But then you get a similar amount on the engine and with its little tiny 1.9-gallon gas tank.
So, I'm psyched. I just had to say that. I'm psyched. Okay. But the next one, I'm really working on Tesla, and you'll have to help me with that one.
Yeah. Tesla's tough.
I know.
I will say only Tesla's tough.
But Seth got one for a couple of days, like 2 or 3 days. I'm like, okay, if Seth can get one, I'm in line.
Got it.
So what else?
Really, the only other car, just to finish up on the Volt.
Oh, yeah.
Damn it, Volt. it's a terrible name for a car.
Well,
my last name, remember, is Volker with a V.
Yeah.
And I am living testament to the idea that, in fact, people confuse letter B like boy and letter V like Victor all the frickin' time.
Yeah.
Not to mention Spanish language speakers, where in some dialects, in fact, all the V's come out as B's anyway.
Yes, right.
So I really hope they rename it. By the end of the auto show, everybody in the press room was saying, no, Volt with a V, not Bolt with a B, and vice versa.
Yeah.
But what I hear is that the shape of the car is roughly similar to what GM will produce. The interior is not. The interior is a concept interior.
Okay.
It will probably be a lot more like a traditional subcompact interior,
you know,
normal, predictable plastic.
Yeah.
But that GM intends to put it into production as a 2018 model, and it will be available sometime in the second half of the year 2017.
Well, you and I will talk about this again, I'm sure.
Absolutely. And the only other event, really, that was remotely green at the Detroit Auto Show was that Hyundai introduced the latest generation of its Sonata Hybrid.
Right.
They had introduced a new body style this year, but the hybrid version stayed with the old body, so now there's a hybrid version in the new body. And, more importantly, they added a plug-in hybrid version of the Sonata. They say it will get 22 miles of electric range, which is higher than the Ford Fusion Energy.
Yeah.
Or
the C-Max?
Or the C-Max, yeah. But also higher than the Honda Accord plug-in hybrid and what's the one I'm forgetting? There's one more.
I'm not sure.
Totally spacing.
That's okay.
Anyway, it's the highest range of any plug-in hybrid save for the Chevy Volt.
Huh.
So I think, you know, and Hyundai's a very aggressive company. I spoke with their chief executive in charge of what they call eco-vehicles, basically green cars.
Right.
And not only will they have hybrid and plug-in hybrid versions of both the Hyundai Sonata and the Kia Optima, but they're also going to have a dedicated hybrid like the Prius.
Huh.
And that body will be able to be a regular hybrid, but higher mileage because it's designed purely to be a hybrid.
Right.
Or a plug-in hybrid or a purely electric car.
Oh, very cool.
So, you know, it's sort of like imagine if you had not only the current Prius and the Prius plug-in, but then a fully electric version of the Prius. And that's what Hyundai is intending to do within the next 3 years. So that was kind of the green car news from Detroit.
Well, and did I ever tell you what car I did settle on after, you know, a year or two of...
What did you end up getting?
I got, ready, drum roll, the Ford... The Ford C-Max Energy.
Got it. The plug-in hybrid version of the C-Max.
Exactly. And I really love it. But yeah, I mean, in this weather, I get a little bit less mileage. But I'm telling you, I bought one tank of gas in 2014. I had the car for 5 months. Mm-hmm. And then so far, I've only purchased one tank of gas in 2015.
Excellent.
And I'm very happy so far. But then again, I haven't driven the BMW.
What do you find your real-world electric range to be on the C-Max Energy?
It is pretty, in the summertime, and you know, the warmer weather, I was getting like 22 miles.
Wow. That's also, that's actually above the revised ratings. You know, they re-rated that one when Ford found some errors in its testing procedures.
Yes, I remember that.
Mileage that the ratings... were indicating was not what owners were getting.
A little inflated.
So 22 is actually above the new rating, which is good. So that speaks well of your efficient driving tech.
I did that 30-day plug-in drive with Toyota a couple of years ago.
Oh, that's right.
The competitive
one.
You
got a lot of practice driving thriftily.
So I'm like, I really am obsessed with it. It's kind of funny. But anyway, well, John, I really could talk to you all day. I miss you, and I hope we actually get you in the studio at some point. I know it's a little bit of a trek, but we have so much fun, and we'll do more soon. So tell people they can see your work. You're the senior editor of GreenCarReports.com now, right?
I'm a senior editor at High Gear Media, which is a company that owns the site. I'm actually the editor of GreenCarReports.com. We do 4 to 6 articles every weekday on a variety of different kinds of green technology. Plug-ins, both battery electrics and plug-in hybrids, fuel-efficient and smaller cars, diesels, natural gas cars, and really just the technologies and hybrids, of course, let you drive more efficiently. You use less energy to do it.
Absolutely one-stop shopping for any questions or data or the latest information. And so that's that. And, John, have a great day. Have a great blizzard because that's when we're recording. And we'll talk soon.
Happy snowpocalypse. I'll talk to you soon. Thanks very much for having me. Bye-bye.
Want more information on this Green Dude segment and other ideas for low-stress green living? Go to thegreendivas.com. That's greendivas.com. The Green Divas get to talk to so many inspiring people who each in their own way is helping us find a deeper shade of green. Here's just one of them. Enjoy.
Wow. When you hear this story, you're going to be like, what? Oh, my God. And this woman, this young woman is such a wonderful journalist, producer, reporter. And she is a producer and reporter with Inside Climate News, which is reporting on some of the sort of the hot news, frontline. Ironically, I use that word because I think she used to work with Frontline, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Sabrina Shankman. Hi, Sabrina.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Oh, my God. So we were talking a little bit in detail about you've done an ebook and you've worked on this documentary about a story called Meltdown Terror at the Top of the World. Do you want to tell us what the heck that's about?
That's right. Yeah, happy to. So this project started in, September of 2013. The ebook tells the story of a man who was traveling with a group from the Sierra Club up to the Arctic tundra of Canada. They were up in Labrador on a backpacking adventure with the hopes of seeing polar bears and also just the majestic countryside up there.
Right.
And just a few days, you know, as soon as they arrive at the destination, they start seeing polar bear after polar bear after polar bear. They actually described it to me as having National Geographic moments right from
lots
the start.
Of them. Yeah.
You know, more than anyone would have expected.
And that doesn't seem like it would be normal. Like they're just not that obvious around humans, are they?
No, I mean it's typically, you know, you would expect it would be kind of hard to see them. I mean, this was certainly an area where they knew there was a good possibility that they could see them, but you know, nothing's ever a sure thing. But they, you know, lucked out on that front, or so they thought, because
I'm sorry, I'm laughing. It's
yeah,
awful.
No, it's. I mean, it's a. They laugh about it too. But a couple days later, as they were sleeping behind an electric fence one night, they woke to the sounds of the screams of a man named Matt Dyer as he was dragged from his tent by a polar bear who had just walked through their electric fence. You know, it didn't really do a whole heck of a lot.
Apparently.
And, drags him toward the mouth of the fjord and, you know, was attempting to take him off into the night. So this ebook and this project really tells the narrative story of just what happened to Matt Dyer, this man who was attacked, and how his group dealt with this. And it's kind of an adventure story of this trip into the Arctic. But it's also really a story about climate change, because throughout we weave into this narrative the science of sea ice loss, climate change, and what this all means to the Arctic ecosystem,
yeah.
And specifically to polar bears.
Apparently, you know, they're getting hungry.
Well, yeah, I mean, one of the things we're, you know, for, you know, decades.
Either that
now,
or they're just mad.
Right. Hard to say. You know, biologists have been saying for a long time that one of the possible symptoms of climate change is that there could be an increase in human and polar bear interactions, which is the word they use.
Yeah.
It's a kind of tame word for what is actually a pretty gruesome thing.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, that's what they're seeing. You know, in the course of my reporting, I was talking with a biologist who's putting together the first ever database of human and polar bear interactions. And sure enough, what he's seeing is that these numbers really are on the rise already. Just in the past decade, really, like in the time that we're seeing a huge decrease in sea ice, which is the polar bear's habitat,
right.
You're also seeing an increase in these attacks. I mean, we're still not talking about huge numbers of attacks, but it is interesting to see that correlation.
Well, are they actually attributing it to anything specific yet, or is it just guessing?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the hard thing. So you can't get inside the head of a polar bear.
Right, right. Well, like, there's that.
You can't say, oh, this polar bear was starving because of climate change, and so it saw Matt Dyer sleeping in his tent and thought, that looks good. But,
yum.
Yeah, exactly. So we don't know that, and we're clear about that in the project, that
yeah.
you really can't fully attribute any attack to climate change. But what we do know is that you didn't used to see polar bears in areas where you're seeing them now, in a lot of these inland communities, in these Inuit towns that are right near the ice or further inland. They're seeing bears just walk through the center of town because they're searching for food.
Now, let's get back up a little bit. Are polar sure. bears carnivores? I think they are, right?
Oh, they definitely
seals
are.
Seals and things like that, right?
Polar bears are one of the biggest carnivores on the planet, and they are the apex predator of the Arctic, which means they're at the very top of the food chain.
Yeah.
And they're, I mean, I, in the course of reporting this over, the, you know, over a year, I just became kind of increasingly obsessed with them because they're fascinating. I mean,
yeah.
they've evolved to live on the ice, and what that's meant is whereas other bears hibernate, polar bears are like, oh, it's getting cold? This is great. You know,
yeah.
like let's party.
Right. They want to take a nap when it's hot out.
Right, right. They do not. They actually overheat. They don't do very well. So they live out on the ice, and they hunt seals, primarily ring seals. And what they do is they wait very, very patiently by the hole, the breathing holes that the ringed seals pop up at to catch a breath. And they pounce, and they grab the seal by the head, and they crush its skull and
nice.
Drag it onto the ice.
Well, that would be effective, I suppose.
It would, yeah. It seems to do the trick. They're very, very good hunters. And seals are a great meal because they have so much fat,
right.
which is really what the polar bear wants. Like, polar bears are able to process fat in a way that scientists are just kind of trying to wrap their heads around right now. But, you know, if they're not out on the ice, though there are some instances that people have seen polar bears catch a seal, it's very rare. I mean, pretty much the way that they work is they go on the ice, they catch a seal, they eat it. And that's
yeah.
and so when you change up how long they can be on the ice, which is really what we're talking about with climate change, all of a sudden it throws a major wrench in the system,
yeah.
and we're just now seeing what that means.
Now, Matt wasn't a particularly big guy. I mean, you know, the polar bear didn't say, like, oh, that's the dude with the fat. I'm going there.
No, not at all. Matt is a very trim man.
I have to go see this film now.
He was inside his tent, too.
Yeah.
But, I mean, what had happened in this situation is they had been out hiking and had come across a bear and followed all the protocol they had learned. And I should be perfectly clear, these are experienced hikers
yeah.
that had done every bit of research they could possibly do to be prepared as
right.
they were on this trip.
Right.
So they did what they had been told to do, and they end up scaring this polar bear away by firing a flare at it.
Right.
But the bear doesn't really go away. It goes up and it sits on a ledge in eye shot of their campsite.
Oh,
and
dear.
It just hangs out.
Apparently.
Sitting there.
Plotting revenge.
Well, hard to say, right? and so eventually, late that night, the bear disappears, and then they go through a day that's pretty uneventful, and then it's the next night that the attack happens. So we don't really know if
right.
that was the bear that attacked them.
Yeah.
But, when the people from Parks Canada, the parks regulators, went through and tried to, investigate this incident after the fact, they said there's a very good chance because it appeared that the bear, had been spending time in that area and that,
right.
that it wanted to go back to where
it's
by a ledge.
Territory, perhaps?
Perhaps. Yeah, and sure enough, I went up there with this production team from Vice who produced the documentary Polar Bear Man that goes along with the project. And we saw a bunch of polar bears right by that that same ledge. I mean, it seems to be kind of prime real estate for polar bears.
Were they looking at you like you were a cute seal?
They were not. No.
Okay, good.
No. And our trip was a little different. We had two Inuit bear guards who were traveling with us who were just incredible and knew the area very well and also are allowed to carry guns. Most people cannot.
Okay.
And this group of hikers that was attacked was not carrying a gun.
Wow. But they managed to save Matt. And I guess you have to see the documentary and read the ebook to find out.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that would... But it's a crazy story. You know, fortunately, thank goodness, Matt was able to survive it. I mean, the litany of injuries that he suffered, you know, it's a list that just goes on and on.
That's traumatizing.
Yeah, yeah. Although he's an amazing man. You know, he was so psyched to go back up there with us just a year after this attack happened.
Good for him.
Yeah, and was like the coolest dude on the trip. You know, he was totally unfazed. You know, loves the area, loves the wilderness, loves polar bears, and the environment up there. So
yeah.
He had a very unique perspective on all of it, to be
well,
sure.
I think if you do have an enlightened perspective at all, you would know that it wasn't personal.
Exactly.
And, you know, it's interesting because the polar bears have become sort of the poster children for global climate change.
Mm-hmm.
And we see these, you know, adorable and of course there's been animations made by companies for commercials for Super Bowls. And they look
right,
like
we all see the Coca-Cola bear.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And they're like sweet and oh look, he's hugging, you know. And you know, people don't realize that they are animals who you know, there are carnivores. They are at the top of the food chain.
Yeah.
And they're hungry.
They are huge, huge animals. It was amazing to see them in person, to see just how big they are.
Wow.
You know, and then to learn more about just, you know, they have these huge teeth, they have these huge claws, they're just, you know, they're kind of killing machines. But that's how you survive in the Arctic, or how you did. And so the question is, well, what happens now, you know?
Yeah. Wow. And so there obviously has been measurable. I mean, we've done reports and talked to different climate scientists about the measurable change that's occurring in these environments.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it was fascinating. I mean, I spent as much time talking to the scientists as I did those who were on this trip. And, you know, since 1979, since we started having a satellite record of sea ice in the Arctic,
right,
nearly 700,000 square miles of sea ice have disappeared. So that's like the size of the western U.S.
Yeah, basically. I was going to say, like, we've got to put that in perspective because it sounds big.
It is big. I mean, it literally is about the size of the western part of the U.S., and it's just gone. And so, you know, it's a little bit hard, I think, to wrap your head around sometimes because some years have less sea ice than others, right? So 2014, for instance, was not, you know, a record-breaking low in terms of sea ice coverage. So some people might look to that and be like, well, see, we don't really have
see?
A problem. It's just normal fluctuations.
Right.
But when you look at the trends over time, what you see is that things might go up and down a little bit on a year-to-year basis, but overall, this trend is going steeply downward in terms of just how much sea ice is left.
It does seem to be accelerating. And then we were talking to, I can't remember which climate scientist at the moment, but he was explaining that there's like this layer, I don't want to say soot, but there's this layer of stuff, pollution, that is covering the top layer of ice that's actually making it melt faster.
That's exactly right. Yeah, so what you see is black carbon, which is one of the most potent forms of pollution, and it's basically a layer of soot that covers the snow and the ice.
So I wasn't wrong.
You were not wrong. And what happens is, right now, when you've got an ice-covered Arctic, you have this beautiful white expanse that reflects the sun's light back up.
Right.
But as the ice starts to melt, as the temperatures rise, you've got more of that blue ocean that's exposed, and instead of reflecting the light, it's absorbing it, right?
Yeah.
So then at the same time, if you've got this black soot covering the ice and snow, you've got another dark surface that's absorbing even more of this sun and just heating things up increasingly. And that's why at the poles, you have an increased rate of warming than you do elsewhere in the world. I mean, it's going about twice as fast in the Arctic as it is, you know, here where I sit in New York.
Right. Oh, my. Yeah, it's, yeah, so this is really an interesting story. So people can get the ebook.
Correct.
How?
There are two ways to get the ebook. You can get it either on Amazon just by typing in Meltdown, Terror at the Top of the World, or my name, Sabrina Shankman. You can also find it on our app, which is called ICN Books, and that's available on the App Store
And that's going to give you a little bit more of an interactive multimedia presentation.
How cool.
And then you can also check out the documentary, which is available on Vice's website. And can we put the link up on your
absolutely
website?
Oh, we're going to have it all up there, sister.
All right, great.
Do you and perhaps there is a post about this that we can sort of share, you know, recycle, if you will, on the Green Divas, and we can make sure we have all these links
for sure
plugged in. Maybe any clips of the video, whatever.
Yeah, we can do that.
Cool. Well, so you're a brave girl. You went up there and checked out the polar bears.
It didn't take much bravery. I would call myself pretty lucky, if anything. It was an amazing trip involving long, you know, including one 10-hour boat ride up to the fjord where the attack happened.
Wow.
But you can't even imagine just how beautiful it is up there till you go. So I'm very fortunate that I have a job where they sent me.
I bet there's some great photographs, too, that go along with this ebook, or at least on the site around it. So and of course the documentary and Vice is so cool. How exciting for you.
Thanks very much.
Well, I hope you'll come to the studio sometime and talk about some of the other fun things you're doing.
That would be great.
All right, Sabrina, thank you so much.
Thank you.
People, go check this out and you'll find all the deets on thegreendivas.com.
Hope you enjoyed that as much as they did. Please visit thegreendivas.com. That's greendivas.com. For more fun podcasts and information on the Green Divas and low-stress ways to live a deeper shade of green. You've been listening to the Green Divas Radio Show. Be sure to look for this and other Green Diva Network podcasts on iHeartRadio, Stitcher, iTunes, Swell Radio, and Spreaker. Get social with the Green Divas on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest. Subscribe to the Green Divas YouTube channel to watch them in action. And for all the latest good green news, visit thegreendivas.com. That's greendivas.com.